Hi, welcome to The Queso. My guest today is Carlos Alberto Hurtado, a Mexican-American Cannes Award-winning filmmaker. He studied at Loyola Marymount University Film School, and in the short time since he graduated, he's already won over 63 awards and has been nominated over 200 times for his work. As you'll hear from our conversation, all of his work stems from his heart for people, from the way that he was raised, from his loving parents and his close-knit family. You'll find some examples of his work on his website, carloshurtadofilms.com. He has worked on numerous commercials, on projects for different platforms, including recently a music video for the Mexican group Voz de Mando for their song Soldado Latinoamericano. He also directed the video for David Lawrence's rendition of Sabor a Mi, a tribute to the artist's mother, Edie Gourmet. You'll hear the story of the journey he and his family took to be in this country, who his heroes are, and even some advice from young filmmakers. Thanks for joining me. Yeah, so I'm really excited to talk to you. You've been pretty busy for the past, 5 years or so? That's really
About now 6 years, because I actually started back in 2002 when I was at LMU. Mm-hmm. And then I got nominated for a Student Academy Award, won a Kodak grant, and I decided to take over my dad's business. And I did that and I still, you know, help him out here and there. But for about 15 years, I went away from film. Oh, actually 14 years.
So what does your dad do again? What is your family business?
We have a family business, drapery and upholstery for interior designers and architects. I've always been in the mix of art and all that stuff. That's one of the things I love, because fortunately I get to see some of the most amazing houses in architecture, and just interior designers are also artists. When they dress up a house and everything, it just blows you away.
So us feeble DIYers, just give it up. Just take it to a professional. Yeah. You know, and I find it interesting, talking about that Kodak award you won. I was looking at the film that you did for school, the one that you won that award for.
Yeah.
And it's funny, maybe it's not even on purpose, but it kind of reminds me a lot of what you did with Sabor a Mi. It's like very Baroque-ish. Like, is that intentional? Is that kind of your signature?
I think maybe it's my signature. I honestly, most people would say, you know, they think about exactly what they're doing. And I think unconsciously, you know, I just create art the way that I feel that it's coming out. And I just try to speak from that voice, from what's going on, and just kind of let people interpret it. Because with that film that you're talking about, Through Grace and War, about, you know, kind of the spirit and all that stuff that goes along with that project, mm-hmm. Everybody interprets it differently. And I like that. I kind of like leaving things open for interpretation. Mm-hmm. So because, you know, where you come from, where I come from, or where everybody comes from, you know, we look at things differently. The same moment might happen at that one instance, but because of your perspective, your way that you grew up, your culture might change the lens of how you look at that one moment that just occurred for all three people, the same thing.
Definitely. And you know, it's very similar. Would you say there is a signature that you have with a lot of the work that you do? Do you leave something at each project? They said that's an Hurtado project.
I guess I never look at it like that. I mean, I hear about, you know, when they look at my work, they tell me that's a Carlos Hurtado project. Because even the project that I afterwards said I got co-nominated for a Student Academy Award, mm-hmm. they right away said, well, there's a lot of influence from Carlos that did this. Because I think I tend to do a lot of things with people, and also, you know, kind of leaving open, did this really happen? Is this real? And, you know, just kind of bring it down to emotions of what you feel, because I think that's my greatest strength. And I think that's probably would be my signature. I always try to grab onto an emotion, because I'm explaining myself through my art with visuals, and it comes from an emotional place.
Right. And now saying that you express yourself through visuals, because that's your art. At some point you actually became a full-time director, right? Because I imagine there was a time where you wore many hats, where you were a producer, right?
Yeah, trust me, I was at the beginning. I was a producer, I was a cinematographer, I was a production designer. I mean, I was pretty much doing everything. Screenwriter. And luckily, you know, at the very beginning, like, my dad will help me out, my mom will help me out, my sisters, you know, family and friends. And luckily I've gotten to the point that, you know, I have my production designer, I have my cinematographer, I have my producer.
And when did that happen? Like how deep were you when that happened finally?
You know, it's you know, from this current journey of 6 years coming back to it, I think it probably happened about 3 years into it. I mean, luckily I've always been lucky to have a cinematographer. So I stopped doing that within the first year and a half. You know, I found somebody who really loved my work and said, you know, I want to work with you and everything. And so I've been blessed through this whole journey. So that's why when you see this amazing cinematographer, yeah, great images, is because I've been blessed with people who have this enormous talent. And, you know, getting a producer was a next big step for me. And that came along, I want to say about 3 years ago. And it was for, I'm not sure if you know a group, it's from Mexico called Voz de Mando.
Yes, yes.
So
about the video of the soldier, yeah.
Yeah, and what do you call it? I had just gotten back from Cannes because I got nominated again for Best Emerging Filmmaker in 2017. And right before I went to Cannes, I got interviewed by ABC, and I met this gentleman named Jose Mallorquin, who's an amazing guy and everything. He loved, you know, the interview he did with me. And he goes, hey, you know, whenever you have something, you know, reach out to me. We can have a conversation, stuff like that. And then, you know, the Voz de Mando project came about, and, you know, I said, well, this is a big project. This is a, you know, a Latin Grammy nominated artist. I, you know, I want to see if I can pull more people in so we can get something done. Even though I know that I've done great things in the past, I just wanted to step it up one more notch. And, you know, I talked to him, and he came on board. And I mean, Jose from ABC, he's won 4 Emmys. I mean, he was nice enough to come on board and everything, and he really believed in me. And so it's been a flow in all of this. And even with Sabor, I mean, he also produced that. Mm-hmm. So just starting to have, you know, those pieces fall into place, but it's like anything else, it's a journey. At the very beginning, yeah, it seems like you're alone, even though you're not, because I, like I said, I'm blessed with a great family. So I had my parents and everything. And it's funny now, like, you know, when I do projects, I tell my dad, hey, dad, can you help me with this? He goes, no, you have crew now. You can do that. I've gone through the pain and suffering of having to pick up things at 4 o'clock in the morning, not getting any sleep.
Time to read the reports.
He's joking. He's joking. Right? But at the same time, he's like, you got crew.
It's true. You're lucky because it happened really early for you and kind of quickly. But I feel like, you know, if you put out that positive energy, good energy comes back to you. And before I go on to my next question, I actually was going to ask you about the Voz de Mando video. But how cool is it to say, I just gotten back from Cannes? How cool is it to say that?
It's just cool. I mean, it was a great, you know, the great part about it, you know, the first time I went there was in 2015. I won, and my mom was there and everything. So it was great that she came along. She saw, and with also one of my best friends, Nitzia Chama, she was there and her family. So it was a really nice thing. And then in 2017, it was great because my mom was able to go again. I'm really close with my parents and everything.
That's great.
So, you know, coming back, it was really nice. I mean, it's it sounds funny. Like when I say I've gone to Cannes, I've won. It's like, it's not something I overthink about, but I know it's a big accomplishment too. Because right. I mean, whatever we do, we have to be proud of it.
You can set your schedule to it now. You can say, I think it's time to change my watch batteries. I haven't changed them since the last time I went to Cannes, right?
Yeah.
But I do notice, like in that video for Voz de Mando, Soldado Latinoamericano, I could see bits and pieces of kind of like your ideas in there, especially the scene of the march with the different flags.
Yes.
Now, did you have any input as to like the diversity of nationalities that were represented there?
Yeah, luckily, you know, Jorge, which is the lead singer for Voz de Mando, he gave me pretty much all the creative freedom. So it was great working with him and, you know, with the manager and everything, because they really trusted me going into this project. Mm-hmm. You know, I wrote the script, they loved it. And then coming about diversity, I just wanted to be able to express all of Latin America, because it's not just, you know, Mexicans, which are mostly in Los Angeles. And then you have Puerto Ricans, you have Cubans, you have people from Salvador, you have all these great countries. And I just wanted to be able, as much as I could, to be able to include all that, because, you know, the song is about a Latin American soldier, but at the same time, it's, you know, the whole thing that has been going on with DACA, Dreamers, and everything.
Right.
I want everybody to be represented, because it's not just one person, it's all of us. It's all of us as a family.
And I think I've heard you talk about that philosophy in the last few years, where a lot of people make the distinction, say, here's Carlos, he's a Mexican American director, he's doing this project that's helping Mexican American kids, you know, but you've made the distinction where you don't want to just include one group of people. And I understand that, but how has that changed in the last 4 or 5 years, even the last few months from what we saw in Minnesota? Like, how has that changed as far as identity for you in your project?
I think it goes back to the same thing which I said in the past, and it's something, you know, of upbringing, and also something I believe in. It's like, if you start, at least, you know, and this is just a philosophy, I mean, you can let me know what you think, is that, you know, when you start separating yourself, that's where the isolation comes from. Mm-hmm. And when I grew up, my dad goes, yes, because I was born in Mexico and I was raised almost all my life here in Los Angeles. He goes, yes, you're Mexican. Be proud of that, but also embrace everything around you too. Mm-hmm. You know, from every race, every culture and all that stuff, because that's going to enrich you. And I think, you know, when I think about myself as a Mexican-American director, yes, I want to help out my community, also the Hispanic community in general, beyond Mexico, because if I start just going on one route, then I feel I'm leaving other people out. And I think for myself, I want to be able to, you know, do projects that help, you know, organizations, because I've done a lot of work for nonprofit organizations mm-hmm. to help out. I'm not sure if you saw Holly Grove. Holly Grove is about helping children who have been abused and everything. And that for me was a big thing, because I think, you know, helping out children is the most important thing in life. You can give back, especially when you don't have a parent and all that stuff. And you understand, it's like, this is the one part that my gift, at least that I feel that, you know, that I can give back and, you know, hopefully inspire somebody. So going back to the question is, you know, I want to be able to create as a general, as a whole, because I think that's what brings us together at the very end.
Yes, and I do understand that. And I still see, though, that you do kind of talk about those inequalities, you know, subtly, but they're there, which, you know, it's still important to bring to light, because there's still...
Yeah, definitely. It's important to bring it to light, because I think if you stay quiet, then you're partaking in the problem.
Right.
But when you're able to have your voice, and everybody has their voice, it's either writing... you know, interviews, or what do you call it, directing, or any kind of art you have, or even a politician, you have an art, and your art in that way can help out other communities.
Right.
So it's how you utilize that. And, you know, for me, the best way I express myself is through images. And that's what I try to do for these organizations, and about inequality, or about just in general, you know, being people, because that's what we are at the end of the day. We're human beings. We have the same blood running through us and everything. We might come from a different part of the city, a different culture, but at the end of the day, I'm sure you love your mom and dad. As you know, you have brothers and sisters or family. We all come together as a community.
Right. That's where we find our strength, to mm-hmm. reach out to our brothers and sisters of another culture. And even, you know, food is a huge one. Like, you know, just partaking in the menus from different communities. I feel like you and I might have had this similar experience, me being from South Texas, and, you know, I was born and raised in Texas, but so close to the border that we were, you know, speaking Spanglish all the time. Didn't really learn Spanish the right way till I went to college. And a lot of times you get even your own community lashing out at you, like, why didn't you learn it correctly? Why didn't you learn Spanish correctly? But like I said, the further that I go in my career, or even from the border, the more I want to say my name with that rolling R, and the more I want that to be appropriate, you know, because I feel it's important. It's a part of my identity. That's me. So.
No, it's very true. I mean, yeah. I went through that similar situation between English and Spanish, because, you know, just a short story, when I was a kid, you know, I was in public school. I wasn't doing very good. I was getting bad grades in math, English, everything. And then my parents didn't have much money at that time, but they said, you know what? And I have two sisters. I grew up more with my older sister. My younger sister is about 10 years younger than me. So, and they decided to take out a loan and put us into a private school. Mm-hmm. And I was, you know, far behind, a grade and a half in English, a grade in math. And, you know, I was still trying to find my voice, English, Spanish, where am I from, or what am I speaking? Because at home, you know, I talk to my mom in Spanish all the time, and my dad I always talk to in English, even though they're both from Mexico and they both speak very fluent. I just grew up with that. And then, like you said, later on, you get into your identity. Like, you know, at the very beginning, my name, you know, I would say, you know, when I put it on the title for a director, was Carlos Hurtado. Mm-hmm. And then I started switching that up. I go, okay, my name is Carlos A. Hurtado. And then I finally embraced my middle name, which is Carlos Alberto Hurtado. And it's kind of like, you know, you grow into it. It's like, you know, you don't do it on purpose, but you just like, the confidence is there, and you just want to speak out. You know, it's not saying, you know, I'm from here, but this is my culture. This is who I am.
Yeah.
And I'm proud of it. I mean, that's how it is.
I think young people today have a lot more support also. Like, it's very chic and in vogue to be culturally aware and to be woke, you know, so that's a huge thing right now. So, I know you always wanted to be a professional baseball player. I know that about you. So how cool was it to have one of your videos shown at Dodger Stadium?
That was awesome. That's an amazing experience. I mean, I mean, it's kind of breathless. I don't know what to say about that because, I mean, I grew up watching the Dodgers and everything. I still remember the last time they won, which was 1988. We're becoming like the Chicago Cubs. We're going to win in 30 years.
It's so, a one time you remember. Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
and I remember all those games in detail. So, you know, just be to have that experience, to have that opportunity for my family to be there and just see that. I mean, it was a really special moment.
You know, you're like, one way or the other, I'm getting in that Dodger Stadium.
Yeah, that's true, it. Right? I didn't become a baseball player, but you know what? It's being shown at Dodger Stadium. Okay. Yeah. It's not a bad it's not a bad exchange.
It's not bad, no. And more people got to see you, and more people are seeing more about you now. Sabor a Mi, which is the latest and greatest of your work right now. It's being, you know, talked about just everywhere. Did you expect this kind of feedback on directing a music video?
You know, I usually don't go with any expectations when I create something. I mean, I put all my heart into it. I put all my devotion and try to pull all the resources I can to do the best possible project. Because I always feel everything you do, you have to be proud. Like, it's the best thing you've ever done. Right. So, you know, I went with that whole experience. And also, you know, the great thing with Sabor a Mi, with David Lawrence, the musician, the son of Edith Gourmet, who remade a song for his mom, which I thought was very touching, was just the fact that when I talked to him the first time, it was about family, it was about his mother, and it was about, you know, that this was coming from the heart. And that just really propelled me more to want to be part of this project, to really dive in a little bit extra. And then, you know, what has come about, and, you know, I'm very happy. I don't know what to say.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great accomplishment. I think he does a great tribute to his mother. I don't think anyone else could do it but him, you know.
It's a special connection. I mean, it's the son singing his mother's song, and it's a great classic bolero song.
Yes.
I think it's just a great connection.
Yeah, that's beautiful. So what kind of projects are in the works for you now? I mean, we're in this bubble called 2020. It has its limitations,
right. I get my refund back.
Right. But I mean, I feel like it's given us so many limitations, but at the same time has caused us to reflect a lot and caused us to look inward for what's going to happen next, you know, in our personal journeys. Anyway, that's how it's been for me. How has it affected you at all in this way or any way at all?
You know, the one thing for me, it's, you know, the moment that I've taken with what's happening, you know, this year, 2020, which is a lot, is, you know, I've always been very close with my parents, and I just want to make sure that they're safe, and I'm doing everything, you know, doing social distancing and all that stuff. Haven't got to see many people, but I think it's the bigger plan for me is just to make sure my parents stay safe during this time, and that, you know, I want to enjoy them for years to come.
So yeah, I mean, you know, your parents are a huge part of everything that you do. Yes. I commend you for that, because you know, I think that's really important. As a child whose parents have given everything to have your dreams come true. And I know you came to this country because you were seeking better medical treatment, and that has led to this, you know, but your parents did so much to get you here. What do you recall at all, like from your when you were younger, maybe going back to Mexico as a kid?
Yeah, no, we went to Mexico back a lot. I mean, in my mom's side, there's 17 brothers and sisters. Wow. And on my dad's side is 10 brothers and sisters. So it's a big family.
Yeah.
So I always remember going back there. We would go there once a year and everything. And, you know, the biggest thing I always remember is that, you know, we grew up poor, and my parents never let us feel like that. Mm-hmm. We always felt special, like we had everything. Mm-hmm. I mean, even when it was Christmas, they would give us, you know, extra toys and stuff like that, and they wouldn't buy anything for themselves. And I even remember my mom telling me, and I, you know, when I recall, it's like, you know, sometimes, you know, it was a big treat to go to McDonald's or to Jack in the Box, like once a month. It was like the hugest thing for me and my older sister. But my mom and my dad would never eat, you know, at the Jack in the Box or McDonald's, because they were buying us food, like a special treat, and they didn't have enough for themselves. But they wanted to see us happy. And they never told us that until much later on in life. It's like, you know, those moments happen because we really love you. We wanted to give you everything possible. And from education, from, you know, being blessed later on, like I said, my sister's younger sister, and just all the fruits of the labor, what they've done, because I, you know, I'm proud of both my sisters. My older sister is a CFO at UCLA, and she's worked really hard. She got her, what we call, undergraduate at UCLA, got her master's afterwards, and just got accepted to UCLA for her PhD. And that a lot has to speak with my parents, always pushing us to say, don't settle for just anything. Make sure if you're going to settle that you're happy internally, but if you can push yourself a little bit more, that's going to bring you more joy. And then also with my little sister, She started up her own pillow business and everything. And it's all the fruits of the labor of what goes into being a family, being a unit. And that's what I, you know, what I love about film also is when I go on, you know, when I'm directing and I have my crew, I see them as family. I see them as people that are close to me. And I know every one of them because, you know, all these awards that I've gotten hasn't just been me. It's a team. It's from my producer, from my production designer, all the way down to my gaffer or the people who are picking up, you know, food for us. I mean, all that makes it work. It works in harmony to be able to accomplish things. I mean, if it was just me, I wouldn't be here. And yes, that's,
you have great, you know, I think you just give off this great energy and I think it attracts people to you. And it must come from your parents because you mentioned them so much that I know that you love them and they care about you and they did a really good job with you. I feel like your family should be like the poster family for, you know, immigration or something. You know, it's like, it's so great because there's so many misconceptions of what immigration is and what it means to immigrate to this country. And what even what the American dream is, it's not what people make it out to be, like a cookie cutter dream.
It's hard work. It's a lot of things that go into it. I mean, it's, you know, just going back into, you know, how we got here because I was sick and everything. And, you know, me and my mom and my older sister were on visa. My dad, you know, didn't have any papers. And, you know, luckily because of the 80s, it was amnesty. Yeah. It gave him an opportunity because he would always worry what's going to happen because, you know, I don't have papers and all that stuff. What's going to happen to my family if I'm ever, you know, sent back to Mexico and everything. And what he did, he worked hard. He started off working at a restaurant and everything. Then he found a job that started paying him a little better. He worked at a place that made draperies. And one day my mom's an amazing person who just pushes you to do more. She turns around to my dad and says, you know what? Why don't we take out a loan? You should and you need to, because I know I see it in you, start your own business. Mm-hmm. And that's what changed a lot for us in terms of, you know, just being able to provide more and being able to do more things. But it was that push of each other between husband and wife. You know, one is working, the other one's, you know, taking care of the children, teaching us, because I learned Spanish from my mom because she was a teacher. Mm-hmm. And she gave up being a teacher coming to the United States.
Yeah.
And but she instilled all these great values. My dad instilled all these great work values. And then when the moment came, they clicked and said, let's take another path in our life. Well, you're talking about the American dream. But before the American dream, you got to go through all the rough patches, all the things you have, all the hurdles, because you don't just get here and suddenly it's amazing. I mean, one in a million might happen to, but most of us, we have to really work to get that. And you know, that's why, you know, I always refer back to them because my dad and my mom are my heroes. I mean, I see them and I still see that I can do a lot more. I feel that I haven't accomplished what I need to yet. And that drives me in a positive way.
And that's great. You know, it's good to see mom and dad. You know, unfortunately, a lot of, you know, there's a lot of single parent homes and it's possible to do it. It's tougher, but it's great to see, you know, a good solid mom, dad. What a difference that does make. I mean, no substitute, really.
Yeah.
You know, but speaking of your journey here, because you came here, you were instilled that Americana, the culture, pop culture. So you really like Back to the Future and Goonies.
Oh, yeah. Those are my favorite movies. Yeah, I watched them over a million times, honestly.
I never tired of Back to the Future, to be honest. No,
not until this day. I mean, I still watch Back to the Future and Goonies.
Yeah.
And I watch it just kind of takes me back to my childhood and reminds me why I wanted to do film, which is to give people an opportunity to escape and just also to be able to dream of bigger things. Because that's what Goonies was. It's about kids going out there to, you know, find gold. And the reason they're doing it is for a great cause. It's because they're trying to help their community, their parents from being, you know, thrown off their land. So, I mean, that's why I just always, you know, was drawn to it.
So many great movies from the 80s and early 90s that I wish there were more like that now. I feel like the technical quality is better, but the substance isn't there like it used to be. And
yeah, I think it's a changing culture. And I think it's like in movies, you know, because, you know, for a long time, I didn't want to watch Casablanca. I don't know why. Like, you know, it was black and white. It's different culture and everything.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, that's what happens with every generation, good or bad. I mean, when I finally took the chance to watch Casablanca, I was amazed and was blown away from the film. And I think it's about embracing the change. And I think, because I do agree. I mean, I'm not sure if you know, the director, John Hughes, he's the guy who did Home Alone, Pretty in Pink, Breakfast Club, all these amazing teenage movies.
Yeah.
And I say, I wish there was a John Hughes today. And, you know, it's different directors, different things. But at the same time, I see a lot of great movies and a lot of great animation.
Maybe there's a Juan Hughes, you know.
Juan Hughes, there you go.
Okay, you know, I have an 11-year-old and I made her watch Stand By Me, The Outsiders. You know, I made her watch all those movies because I think it's just, it needs to be there. Like, it needs to be in her conscience. Like, it needs to be part of her, you know, intellect. It's like, there's so many lessons to be learned. Of course, now that I see them as an adult. I get it now. Before it was just like the cute guys in the movie, you know, that I was watching it. But yeah, and you're probably familiar with the show, The Goldbergs, and how the kid films everything.
The Goldbergs, no, I'm not familiar with it.
And yeah, this is a pretty funny little sitcom, but it's about a kid growing up in the 80s and he films everything. He grows up to be a film director. But at the end of the show, they show a bit of the real home movie and then like the shows. And it's really cute. And it's kind of how I imagine you doing these things when you were growing up, watching and trying to imagine your own movies, how you were trying to, you know, make it your dream as well as a kid in the, I don't know, you grew up in the 80s, but probably.
I grew up in the 80s, yeah.
Yeah.
I grew up in the 80s and 90s. But when I watch films, I mean, like I told you, the other part with me was that I wanted to be a baseball player. I didn't even think about being a director or anything until I was 18. I got hurt and playing baseball. And then, you know, I was like, you know, finally I have to decide, you know, this dream is not going to be possible. And I just kind of scratched my head a little bit and thought, what's something else that I love to do? And then I just came about, I love film. And what I do in film, I like directing because in baseball, I was always a pitcher and the pitcher kind of commands the game, the flow of the game. And I said that I think that's the natural fit. And then luckily I got into LMU and then everything there just, you know, kind of just pieced itself together.
Yeah.
And I started finding my voice little by little.
You want to tell stories. And
I want to tell stories.
Able to do that, you know, and I admire Marilyn Monroe a lot. So like a few years ago, I fell in a rabbit hole. And when I was learning about her life, I learned about your short.
Awesome.
And I was like, oh, wow, that's a director. But I hadn't put it together and I was like, yeah, so you do a lot of great things for the community. You're always seeking like these projects that help children and, you know, people that are going through things. You know, the thing that was one with Padres y Cáncer.
Padres Contra el Cáncer or Parents Against Cancer. Yes.
Right. So is there any project like that you have coming up or that is in the works right now?
I do. It's I have a new project. I don't know the release date yet. It's for Andy Vargas. I'm not sure if you're familiar with him. He's a lead singer for Carlos Santana.
Okay.
So he has a band on his side that he's doing called Soleros. And I directed a project called Dreaming. And it's about dreamers and, you know, the whole thing with Doc and everything. And I filmed some of it in Mexico and then I filmed some of it over here in the United States. So I think it's a great piece. And again, it goes back to the roots that I love to do is being able to speak about people and just being able to bring up issues without making it political. More look at the beautiful side. Because I think when you start looking more at the positive instead of the negative, then you get more positive results. Because if you start scratching and trying to dig a fight or something like that, what do you get? You get negative energy back.
Yes.
So exactly. I think this project I'm really excited about and hopefully it's going to come out in the next month or two. And I'll send it to you right away as soon as it gets
released. That's great. And I know you have your big dream is to make a big feature film and there's something in the works. It's sci-fi or?
Yeah, it's Spaces Between.
Okay. So what can you tell me about that? I know it's still, I think the script just went final or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, the story, maybe you want to know a little bit about the story. It's just about, you know, it's about a young kid who loses his little sister when he's young. And he decides, you know, I guess before I tell you the other part, it's the most important part, I think, when you look at people, because I always like to study people, how we react. Because I always like, you know, I have three nieces that my sister has. And I look all three of them. They've had the same upbringing, same economy and everything. And they're three different girls.
Right.
And that's really special. Even though they've had a nice, smooth sail in terms of, you know, they're a close family. And then I just thought about an idea what, you know, somebody passes away. You know, some people might regress into a depression. Other people, you know, might not feel anything. Other people might fall into addiction and other kind of things. Mm-hmm. And what I wanted to do with this story was kind of explore that part that, you know, when one person, you know, unfortunately, you know, passes away, how does it affect the rest of the family and the people around them? And at the end of the day, what the kid does, he grows up and what he becomes a mathematician and starts building a time machine because he wants to bring back his sister, because his dad became an alcoholic. The mother decided to separate from the family and start a new family. And so he's trying to bring back this memory. But the most important thing is that you can't erase 10, 15 years of pain. You have to accept your past in order to have a present. And if you can't have a present, you can't have a future. Mm-hmm. And what this kid is doing, he's trying to fix the past. And that's the problem that a lot of people, at least my opinion, that people have, is that they keep on falling into the bad times and they can't erase this part. There's no way to erase it. You have to accept that that negative moment that happened in your life or something that was tragic. Mm-hmm. And I know it's tough. I mean, I've gone through experience, and you have to be able to let go in a positive way. So, you know, kind of the, without ruining the ending of the story, mm-hmm. it's about this guy who builds the machine and having to realize that in the process that he's actually damaging more of the people around him by creating this machine than helping.
That makes sense. And it falls right into that category of the Back to the Future, mm-hmm. that intrigue of science and just the possibility of trying to control your fate. And being in the director's chair, I'm sorry, and that's really cool. I can't wait to. When do you expect that to actually be?
Well, I'm hoping for next year. I know this year is kind of tough because everything that's happening with 2020, and it's not the best moment to go out there and film. So I'm looking hopefully by the end of next year to start, you know, getting everything rolling. Mm-hmm. But it's a process. I mean, it's a matter of getting cast, crew, and everybody together. So my fingers crossed that it will happen. Okay. But that's what I'm looking forward to.
That sounds great. So thank you so much for spending a little bit of time with me here at, with my podcast and just sharing your voice. And there's a lot of young directors out there, a lot of filmmakers that are being born from just even what's happening on the streets today, from the protests, from all these things that are happening. I'm seeing so many emerging artists coming out, you know, as far as like video, because of course YouTube is huge and, you know, all these other platforms. What, if any, advice can you offer to these young filmmakers who are passionate about causes but are, you know, telling their story through video?
I think the biggest thing, I mean, it was the same thing with me. Because, I mean, I started doing a lot of music videos at the very beginning. And I think for me, what I needed the most, and this is advice for, you know, for future filmmakers, and the best way you're going to set yourself apart without doing it on purpose is really to look for your voice. Because when you find your voice, it's when you become confident. You really know from your heart what you want to speak about. Okay. And, you know, for me, it's been a journey of finding that voice. That's why, you know, when David came with Sabora Mia about the project, for me, there was a connection. It was about life. It was about love. It was about family. And those are things that draw me. And I want to be able to see, you know, show that on image. Mm-hmm. And there might be other people, you know, they love sports. Find the voice why you love telling stories about sports and everything. Mm-hmm. And just come from the heart. I mean, that's what really separates you. Because at the end of the day, what we have to realize, and I think in general, every one of us is unique. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we fall into, you know, mainstream, like, you know, you're trying to see what you can do. You're special. You just have to find that gift that you have, and all of us have. And right. It might take some time.
Yeah, you know, it might take some time. Now, it didn't take you a long time, but you're the exception. But it still was a lot of work for you.
It's a lot of work. There was a great thing I heard. Let me see if I say his name right. Usain Bolt, the runner. Okay. You know what I'm talking about?
No.
The one who won the gold medals. He says, you know, nobody sees the hard work behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. Everybody sees, you know, when he gets to the podium or to the actual race. But the real work is done behind the scenes. That's when you're pushing yourself, when you're falling down. Nobody's there to help you out. And you have to bring yourself back up. You got to lift yourself because nobody's going to give you a hand. He goes, the easy part is the award sessions or getting to the event and, you know, filming. The hard part is all the in-betweens, which is life, you know, just things in general that you have to go through daily as a struggle, as to achieve. And then when you get to the part you are, I mean, it kind of just flows into place.
Yeah. And I think some of the most successful people that I've spoken to and interviewed, that has been the same piece of advice. And that's how I always can tell this person is really on the right track, because that's the same advice that they always give. You know, people who are most successful always say, I live, sleep, and dream my goals. You know, everything that I do is pointing in that direction, whether it doesn't look like it from the outside, but it's all moving in that direction. So thank you. That's going to be very helpful for some young people that I know who who are aspiring to do more film and tell their stories. There's so many new stories. And what I always tell them is not to be discouraged, step out and be different. You know, because mainstream sometimes can be easier to kind of just get in the mainstream, and then you might kind of float high for a little bit, but it might not last. But if you are you, you're going to make your mark.
Exactly.
It'll be more long lasting. So.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, it's a marathon. It really is. I mean, sometimes, you know, some people skyrocket to the top and they sprint there and they get there, but they don't have the longevity to stay there because you got to pace yourself. You got to do things at a pace. And sometimes it's a bumpy road, but know every time there's a fall, you can pick yourself back up. Because there's, you know, I think one other thing, and sorry if I take up more
time. It's okay. No, yeah.
You know, you have to knock at doors and keep on knocking. That means getting up, going to interviews, or picking up your camera, or picking up your brush, whatever your art is, or whatever your job is that you love to do. And no, you're not going to feel great every day. I mean, it's we're not robots. So we go through that whole process. And I think it's about you being able to sustain yourself to keep on getting up, keep on knocking on doors. Know that you're going to fail. Know you're going to fall down and fall. But eventually you're going to start falling, not falling. Eventually you're going to start standing up and moving forward. And that takes years.
And I think this goes for like a lot of parents who might see their child want to do something in the creative field. And they say, ¿Por qué quieres hacer movies? Like get a job in the factory with beneficios and, you know, like get your medical, you know, and like don't go after that artistic dream. You know, some people are very, you know, they're scared. And it's understandable because everyone wants something 100% secure, especially you just went to college and like, what are you doing? Now you're, you know, or you went to be an art major, now what? But I think it's really important as parents to support young people, their dreams. I always say young people have a point of view that we need, and we should not discount their voice.
I completely agree with that because
they're young.
By discouraging somebody, you can be discouraging the next Mozart, the next Jennifer Lopez, the next Steven Spielberg, because you discourage them. And some people don't have the same skin. I mean, like, I'll tell you one brief story. At the very beginning when I was young, I didn't get accepted to a film festival. And I didn't apply for another year or two to another one because it crushed me.
Yeah.
But now that I, you know, I've, you know, gone through the point of, you know, getting rejected, getting accepted, it's not always a happy day. But the thing is, I don't let it affect me anymore. But going back, if you discourage a kid and tell them you're not good at something or it's too hard, nobody can do it, you got to do this. And if you get them at an early age, and like I said, everybody's different, they might stop doing it because they respect your voice. They see you as a father figure, as a best friend, as a mentor. Mm-hmm. And I think the best you can do is encourage their art and also be realistic about the art. Right. You know that it's a difficult place. It's not like being a doctor. Well, doctors is very hard, of course, but there's no secure job in this. Right. I mean, I had one job opening in film, being a director or any big position, there's at least 20, 40, 50,000 or 100,000 people applying for that one project. So you got to be realistic that, you know, it's going to be financially hard. You got to invest into yourself. Like I did at the very beginning, I invested all my money making, you know, these little music videos or little projects I could, even the stuff that I did with Holly Grove, the one with Marilyn Monroe that she was from. I donated that project in the same way I donated other projects I've done because I wanted, one was to grow as a person, also to show what I can do and also just be me.
Yeah, you have to get out there as, you know, as much as you can. And you know, it might mean you might have to wait tables while you're doing videos for free to get known. It might mean you might have to take that office job that's secure while you're doing your dream on the side, but never stop. Never stop.
And be proud of it. You're waiting tables, be the same proud person you are, you know, do it with pride.
Exactly.
Because you never know who you're gonna meet.
Exactly.
You wait that table, you're cleaning your, you know, building. At the end of the day, if you do it with pride, with your energy that you carry, that you know you are, it's like you said, I mean, energy is infectious. People gravitate towards it. Yeah. And if you do that, I mean, just do everything you can, the best you can. And, you know, that's the best advice.
And then we've seen so many examples of that. So we can't go wrong. And the biggest examples were your parents, the steadfastness, the just, you know, continuing to work, pushing each other to the point where you've achieved so much success that you still are aspiring to be more like them, which is just such a great legacy that your parents have passed down to you. So congratulations, and congratulations to your parents. They sound like amazing people, and I just wish them the best, and just like the best retirement whenever, you know, if they haven't yet, and just enjoy the fruits of their labor.
I try to retire my dad every day, and he goes, no, I still got 10 more years of good work in here. He enjoys it.
So. Now he's at the point where he enjoys it, which is the good part.
Yes.
Well, Carlos, thank you so much for your time today. Thank you. Keep me updated on your project, please, and I'll be following you. And we'll be talking soon.
Okay. Thank you again so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Take care.
Have a good night.
You too.